Hey, this is Noah Levine, founder of Against the Stream, Refuge Recovery, and Dharma Punks. Thanks for tuning in to the podcast. I hope you're enjoying the Dharma. Together, may we create a positive change on this planet. If you feel moved to leave a donation, there's a link in the show notes. May our paths cross soon. Welcome, everyone. Anybody joining us for the first time tonight? Welcome. Welcome. Welcome to anybody. Welcome. Anybody online that's joining us for the first time, welcome. I just finished last week. We finished how many weeks did we do, Sebastian? 10. We completed a 10-week series on the Buddha's teachings on mindfulness, the four foundations of mindfulness. We took 2.5 months to go through that. And I wanted to shift from the mindfulness-based meditation instructions to heart practices, what we call heart practices, practices around developing kindness and compassion and forgiveness and appreciation, generosity. So I think I'll spend the next few weeks doing meditations on what we call the heart practices and using that as our topic. I thought I'd start tonight with the umbrella term of kindness and the importance of kindness and the practice of kindness and the, we'll do loving kindness meditation. And I'd like to start by asking you to talk to each other. It's a core principle of Buddhism to develop community. You develop community by communicating with each other, not just by sitting silently in meditation and not meeting anybody. You'll never develop any community doing that. So I like to give a topic. And so the topic is kindness. And I don't have this fully thought out, but I was thinking of like talking to each other briefly about how you express kindness. You know that kind of cheesy thing that's been going around for a while, like what's your love language? How do you express love? Are you a physical touch? Are you a material gifts, words of affirmation, appreciation? A little bit cheesy to classify, you know, how you do that, but also true. Like we can all see like, oh yeah, I have a tendency in my own natural tendency when I'm feeling kind is to express it like maybe you're touchy feeling, you're a hugger. You're like, I fucking love hugging people, and you know, just, or maybe it is a verbal expression of just like saying, I really appreciate you, thank you, and praising and complimenting and praising each other. Or that's the topic. Like, how do you express, you know, what's your tendency when you're feeling friendly? And I said naturally, but also maybe you're not always feeling that kind, but there's definitely something to the fake it till you make it. Like you don't, you know, like be kind even when you're not feeling kind, be generous even when you're feeling selfish. That counter instinctual encouragement of the Dharma to like not be an asshole. Even when you're feeling angry, still not be unkind. And I'll talk about that in the Dharma talk tonight, and that dilemma of wanting to be authentic, wanting to keep it real and not be fake spiritual, you know, toxic positivity. Like, you know, like we don't want that, but and that dilemma of not being fake, but also trying to be good, trying to be loving, trying to be kind, trying to be generous, trying to be patient with ourselves and each other, even when we don't feel like it, not just when it's authentically our expression, even when we're feeling angry, some renunciation around expressing the anger in unhealthy ways, and maybe finding some healthy ways to do that. So how do you know, what's your practice around kindness? What's your tendency? What's your love language? What's your kindness language? What's your friendliness tendencies? Small groups, you got like a minute, so you just get to kind of report. I noticed that I like to hug, and I'm touchy, or I like to express, or just you have a keep it concise. So find two or three people in the room you don't know yet, so that you meet some new people at home. I will open up these breakout rooms. How do you express kindness? Say a couple of things before we meditate. We spent all of those last 2.5 months with the mindfulness teachings, and the outcome of mindfulness is wisdom. The more we pay close attention, we investigate, we turn towards what's happening physically, emotionally, mentally, present time mindfulness, present time awareness. We see the three characteristics of the truth of impermanence and the unreliable or unsatisfactory nature of things because of impermanence, where we're never able to quite land anywhere. Things are changing so quickly. There's no real security. And we all want that sense of security, but there it's a delusion. The wisdom that so much of what's happening isn't so personal, and one of the functions of Sangha, community gathering to discuss the teachings and to talk to each other, is that process of normalizing what it's like to have a mind and a body that clings and craves and judges and compares, and the outcome of all of that, the second foundation of mindfulness, as we turn towards the impermanent, impersonal, unsatisfactory feeling tones, the pain that is inescapable, the unpleasantness at the eyes, at the ears, at the nose, at the tongue, at the physical body and the heart and mind. We turn towards the pain, and how much of our experience is unpleasant. How many unpleasant sights and smells and tastes we encounter every day? How many unpleasant thoughts arise in our mind? Hundreds, maybe thousands a day. Judgments, comparing, feeling jealous, feeling insecure, feeling angry, feeling afraid. All of those unpleasant mind states. And mindfulness itself will lead to a compassionate relationship to our own pain as we turn towards it. Just practicing present time awareness, you'll become more and more tolerant. And when I talk about this all of the time, one of the reasons, sitting still, learning to do sitting meditation where you just sit here and tolerate being uncomfortable, it's more tolerance towards more mercy, towards more compassion, towards more kindness towards our pain, rather than constantly fidgeting and avoiding and suppressing and medicating and trying to avoid pain. Learning to be with pain leads to being compassionate and kind and friendly towards pain. So mindfulness, I said, leads to wisdom. And there's this false distinction. I'm guilty of it. I have it tattooed on my hands. Wisdom on one hand, compassion on the other. And this false distinction between like wisdom, mindfulness practices, and heart practices. And it's a false duality. The Buddha's teaching is just wisdom. There's not a whole separate heart. Compassion is not separate from wisdom. The wise relationship to pain is compassion. It's compassion is wisdom response. So we make these dualities, these distinctions, but there is none. It's just wisdom. The wisdom to meet pain, the wisdom to meet our experience, each other with kindness. It's not this other emotional thing. It's a wise emotional response. It's all wisdom. Does that make sense? It's non-dual. It's not two separate things. But it's, there's even in some of the Buddhist teachings where they say, the liberation has two wings, the wing of wisdom and the wing of compassion. But it's not, it's actually a one-winged bird. It's a one-winged dove. It's not two wings. It's just one thing. It's just wisdom, compassion, love, kindness, forgiveness. All of it is the wise response to the human condition. And so mindfulness by itself, I don't know how familiar you are with the Eightfold Path, but there's no heart practices in the Eightfold Path anywhere. There's just mindfulness. Mindfulness, and when the Buddha says, we meditate, there's all of the teachings on renunciation. We stop lying and stealing and killing and acting out in unskillful ways sexually, and we avoid intoxicants. There's renunciate, right livelihood, right speech, right action. And then it's effort into mindfulness and concentration. There's nowhere in the original formulation of here's how to get free that it talks about loving kindness. Loving kindness, compassion, those teachings came later. And who fucking really knows why? But my idea about why that is because the Buddha used mindfulness and it led to a loving, open, compassionate heart. Mindfulness got him there. Later, some years into teaching, he realized, oh, it's kind of a, it's a, such a gradual, such a slow process. Maybe I could give people some practices that would help uncover the compassionate heart, that would help practice kindness, even when you're not feeling loving kindness, even when you're not feeling friendly. Here's some phrases, some way to train your mind, your heart, to be kind, to be compassionate, to be forgiving, to be appreciative, to be generous, all of those wise and emotional responses. That makes sense. I think it's maybe it's just theory, but I think it's a little bit important to get our mind around what we're doing and why and how to apply it and to not make a false distinction between the heart and the mind. Even this word citta that is commonly used and translates as the heart mind. And in Buddhism, we don't make there's not a separation between the brain and the emotions. Emotions are part of our mental states. The heart and the mind are the same thing, they are connected. Now, we all know that we feel in our bodies somatically, we feel emotions. It's not just a intellectual experience, it's a physical. And so then we, and somehow in this like centered channel in our body, it's not just in the chest. Like, then you feel emotions in your throat, like you get choked up. Sometimes in your chest, sometimes in your belly, there feels like there's this kind of centered channel where we physically experience emotion. Both afflictive emotions, anger and hatred, and love and kindness and compassion, both in that kind of center channel. Seems that it's easiest to access. You also feel it in your fingers and your toes, but you might not be attuned to that. It's a full body experience when you're fully present. So we'll do loving kindness meditation. And again, these are teachings that came in later. And the original teachings on loving kindness, I said earlier in the before you did the small groups, there's nothing wrong with fake it till you make it. And it's kind of the Buddha's teaching is like, he says, radiate kindness over the entire world. Now, I don't know about you, but when I started doing that, I was like, this is weird because I don't feel kind, I don't feel kindness towards the entire world. I like three people, and everyone else can go fuck themselves. And then trying to be like, oh, wait, I want to be more friendly towards the strangers. And later in the commentaries in Buddhism, one of the great Theravadan Buddhist commentaries called the Visuddhimagga by Buddha Ghosa Bhikkhu, He said, break it into five categories rather than just all beings and all directions. He said, break it into yourself. Remember that you're part of all. Break it into your benefactors, the people that are easy to love. You know, benefactor is a strange term, but it means those who we've benefited from associating with. Our teachers, our therapists, our guides, our sponsors, mentors, spiritual friends, authors that have inspired us, benefactors, people we've benefited from. Unknown masses, the sort of neutral people, like even the people in the room tonight that you don't know yet, and you're kind of like, I don't hate you yet, but I don't know you yet. You're neutral still to me. And then also including the difficult people, the people we have resentments towards, the people that we have judgments towards, that we're afraid of, that we have othered, we have put out of our heart, maybe for personal reasons, we've been harmed by them or offended by them or something, a category that we call the enemy. And then the fifth, you know, opening to all living beings in all directions. But that commentary-based practice, I think, is skillful to break it down into five chunks rather than just in the early teachings. And it just said, you know, all living beings in the East, send loving kindness. Everyone on the East side. And then everyone on North. And then everyone to the South. So that includes, you know, the neutral people. Maybe you have some homies on the East side or in the North or the South or the West. But also you might have some enemies, right? And your mind starts going to like, oh, you know what? Fuck those guys on the East side. Fuck those guys up North. And being able to break it down into both friend and foe, both those who are easy to love and those who aren't so easy yet to have an open, kind, loving, compassionate attitude towards yet. So I'll do a little bit of the directions in the instruction. I like to keep it kind of old school like that. I'll expand in that way, but also explore some of the categories as we meditate. And in the metta, the loving kindness, it's literally metta translates as unconditional friendliness. And the meditation instruction from the Buddha was straightforward and simple. The basic instruction is wishing for the ease and well-being and happiness of all beings. May you be at ease, sometimes translated as may you be at peace. Now, thinking about ease, if you wish, you know, we all wish to be at ease. Wishing for each other, it's an act of kindness to say, may you be at ease. But remember, I think, again, for me, it's important, these definitions, to be at ease with life as it is. Because sometimes that word ease or peace feels like, you know, I'd be at ease if like things were different. If things were easy, if things were comfortable, if things were pleasant, if everybody wasn't so fucking ignorant, then I'd be at ease. If my mind wasn't so loud, if my body wasn't so uncomfortable, then I'd be at ease. But the point of this is at ease with the way things are right now, with your own pain, with the conflicts, with the difficult relationships, with the great ignorance of racism in the world and sexism and, you know, all of the forms of ignorance and oppression that are true, are here. Not I'll be at ease when it's different, but may I be at ease with the way that it is, with compassion for the ignorance of my enemies, with the, you know. So I think that's important to remember, that we're not wishing for a magical peace on earth, but we're trying to develop a level of kindness and compassion so that we can be at peace with this earth in all of its confusion and all of its lacking wisdom. So we'll meditate with that in mind. Find a way to sit that's upright, that's relaxed. As you allow your eyes to be closed and you make any adjustments necessary, coming into relative stillness, as an act of friendliness and kindness towards yourself, soften and release any unnecessary tension your body may be holding. Soften your jaw, your brow, your shoulders, your chest, your belly. Imagine softening your heart to yourself. The heart can become so armored. Softening the belly, letting the arms rest in the lap or on the legs. Finding that balanced, upright posture that's not tense. Establishing the intention to be kind to yourself, to be friendly, to be accepting, to meet anything unpleasant with compassion, anything pleasant with non-clinging. And begin with the category of benefactor. Bring to mind someone or some group that you have benefited from, a teacher, a friend that has been kind and supportive, encouraging, inspiring. Sending your feelings of appreciation, gratitude. Perhaps it's not even anybody you know directly, just a book you read that was really inspiring. Or I sometimes think of the historical Buddha 2,600 years ago as one of my benefactors, Siddhartha Gautama. So inspired by the teachings of the Buddha. You can use the simple phrase, may you be at ease. You can just have the experience of radiating kindness towards them. For the benefactor, maybe it's mixed with some appreciation. Perhaps even some compassion. Often our teachers also have some challenges, some suffering in their life. Extending the wish for ease, for happiness, for well-being, even if they're no longer in body, alive. In whatever realm you may be in, may you be at ease. May you be happy. May you be free from suffering. to reflect on benefactor, this hopefully wise being. And imagine for a moment how they would see you, the eyes of kindness that they would see you through, the eyes of compassion, unconditional friendliness. Imagining entering that kind of consciousness and view, seeing ourselves through the eyes of wisdom, the eyes of love, the eyes of compassion, this unconditional acceptance on a level that we don't often have for ourselves, but that a wise being would have for us. Trying to see yourself in that way, letting go of the benefactor, turning towards the category of ourselves, of this heart, mind, body that we live in, that we're currently experiencing. Saying to yourself, may I be at ease. Just as I am. May I learn to meet myself with unconditional friendliness, acceptance, compassion. May I learn to be kind towards this body, this heart, this mind. Even the unpleasant parts of our mind, the judging, the comparing, the craving, the resenting. And I learn to meet even those unpleasant thoughts with kindness. Finding some appropriate phrases and saying them to yourself over and over. The traditional ones are, may I be happy, may I be at ease, may I be free from suffering. But you can find your own terms, your own phrases, meaningful. Sometimes it's just the humility to say, may I find the willingness to try to be kind. Try to accept myself just as I am. Beginning to expand a bit from ourselves to each other, the people that you were in small groups with, people you're sitting next to, people you see I've seen tonight on the Zoom rooms. Just as I wish to be met with love and kindness, friendliness, appreciation. I know this is universal, and you also wish to be met with kindness. Extending the wish for ease to each other. May you find true happiness in your life. May you be at ease with yourself just as you are, with this world just as it is. May you do what needs to be done to free yourself from the suffering of clinging, the suffering of resisting, aversion, anger, hatred. May you be free from suffering by your own efforts, your own practice. It's okay if you don't mean it yet. It's okay if you don't feel it yet. Placing those wise thoughts in your mind over and over, developing the habit of being kind, of being friendly, of being caring towards each other. Expanding to include the whole Sangha, the whole community gathered, meditating, everybody in the room here in Venice, everybody out there joining with Zoom around the country. Sending metta, loving kindness to each other. Your heart radiating friendliness, the wish for ease, radiating kindness. Expanding beyond this group of like-minded meditators out into the world, thinking about your life, bring to mind someone that you have a resentment towards, someone that you're annoyed with, hurt by in some way. Maybe don't pick the most difficult person in your life. Somebody in that category that we call enemy. And begin sending loving kindness to someone that you find currently difficult to love. Even if you don't mean it, saying these phrases, may you find true happiness. May you be at ease. May you be free from suffering. Extending as much kindness towards their pain and confusion. Perhaps it's some obvious ignorance, perhaps not so obvious. But it's safe to assume that those who have caused you harm were in some way in their own confusion, in their own ignorance. May you be free from that confusion. May you heal what needs to be healed. May you do what needs to be done to free yourself from suffering. May you be at ease. They're spending some time sending loving kindness to one of the difficult people. See who else is there. How many resentments? How long is the line? All of the people that we've been hurt by, that we hold resentment towards, that we haven't forgiven yet. Maybe even some of them that we have forgiven, but it's still painful to recollect. The betrayals, the losses, the difficulties we've been through. Imagine all of the difficult people, all of the people that you've put out of your heart gathered. Perhaps you need a stadium for them. Perhaps it's just a room or a field. Imagine them gathered and extending loving kindness from the wisest part of your heart, your mind, the part that doesn't want to suffer at them anymore, doesn't want to hold on. In part that understands they're suffering beings, sending loving kindness. May you be at ease. May you be free from suffering. May you experience true happiness. And again, expanding from this category to more of a general attitude of loving kindness. This is where we expand outward in all directions. But thinking about the directions, all living beings to the east, radiating kindness. All of the humans, known and unknown, to the east and then to the west. The east out across this continent, the United States, North America. To the west, out across the Pacific Ocean. To the north, south. Till we cover the entire planet, all living beings. On every continent and every nation, nationality, religion, ethnicity. The entire planet, the globe, with the intention of loving kindness. The Buddha's instructions were something like wishing in gladness and in safety, may all living beings be at ease, the weak and the strong, young and the old, those nearby and far away. Training the mind to be kind and loving, friendly. Not just to the humans, but to the animals. All living beings includes those in the sea, in the earth. In the unseen realms, those that we don't see. All beings that exist. May all beings be at ease. Bringing in the wisdom of equanimity, we can also include the phrase something like, may all beings do what needs to be done to free themselves from the suffering of clinging. So that it's not just a magical wish, but it's an encouragement. It's a understanding that freedom is possible, compassion is possible. But everyone has to do that work for themselves. May all beings find the willingness to awaken, to heal, to forgive. for the last couple of minutes, returning to yourself, this being that you have the most influence over, the most intimacy with, your own mind, your own heart and body. It's said that in one teaching, the Buddha said we could search all realms of existence and never find another being, another living being, more worthy of our love than ourselves. So a moment to remember your worthiness and to meet yourself with as much kindness as you can in this moment. As much love, as much appreciation, as much compassion as you can. My belief, my sense, my understanding, maybe it's hope, is that Buddhist practice will lead to kindness. That if we live this path of mindfulness and renunciation and that the outcome will be less and less suffering in our lives, and more friendly, kind, generous, loving interactions with people, with each other, with ourselves, from the inside out. You know, you see examples of like His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama. I don't know if you've ever listened to any of his talks or seen him, or but he's like he's always giggling, like, oh, you know, like so. I mean, he can be serious, but very serious, and he's a powerful teacher, but he just always seems sort of like joking around a lot. He's light. You know, there's a sort of, you know, even we think about enlightenment. And often whatever draws us to meditation, to spiritual practice, for many of us, recovery, usually there's some heaviness, some suffering, right? The first noble truth, there's that suffering. And we can, you know, often enter a path, a spiritual path of kind of bogged down by the suffering of our life. Some way or another. But as we continue and make some progress and meditate over the years, hopefully you become lighter and, you know, rather than, I don't know about the final enlightened Buddha business, but hopefully you lighten up, you know, more and more friendliness, more and more lightness, more and more playfulness. I was listening to some, I was watching some meme podcasting the other day, and a famous trauma psychologist was talking about how his biggest regret was, you know, working too much and being too serious about success. And he's a very successful person. He's like, but I miss my kids' childhood, and I, you know, and I'm, you know, he's, you know, because like I'm just trying to like learn how to play. Now I'm learning how to play. And I know I'm trying to, the topic's really kindness. But for some reason, it also for me brings up playfulness and lightness and having a fucking sense of humor about even about our practice, even about the teachings, even about the very serious nature of the endeavor to try to free ourselves from suffering. And part of kindness is not being too uptight about your meditation practice, or too uptight about your ethics, or you know, you don't want to become that really like judgy Buddhist that's policing everyone else's precepts, you know. Find yourself being like, dude, that's not right speech. That's not very Buddhist of you. And I don't, anyways, I feel like I'm kind of meandering a little bit with the topic, but I did want to explore, because it's important to me, of finding that balance of authenticity. I don't know, I put a lot of importance on people being real and authentic. But I also don't think there's anything wrong with faking it till you make it when it comes to stuff like loving kindness. And like, and my own experience, I started meditating and the mindfulness really made sense to me. Thanks, you. Yeah, see you next time. The mindfulness really made sense to me and gave me some relief. But then when I learned the loving kindness and the compassion, I was like, oh, this isn't giving me any relief at all. It's actually making me feel worse, because it makes me see how unkind and unloving and filled with rage I was. And it just kind of brought it to the surface in a way that was quite unpleasant. And I was skeptical about if I even had the capacity to be compassionate or loving or forgiving or but I, you know, had some teachers who said, well, just fake it. Not like be fake in your life, but sit on the meditation and tell yourself these things. May you be happy, may you be at ease, may you be free, even if you don't mean it. Just keep saying it over and over and find phrases. And sometimes it's may I just be willing to be at ease. May I just be willing to do what needs to be done to free myself from the suffering that I'm creating in my life, causing, experiencing. And my experience was that it took years. I didn't have a quick conversion from resistance into authenticity, into being able to even sincerely say the loving kindness phrases to myself. At least 2 or 3 years before it started to shift for me. For the first, you know, quite a long time, I didn't mean it. I would say, may you be happy. But that judging mind, the critical inner voice was louder than the intention to be loving and kind. And so I'd say it, and I'd sit here in meditation, and I'd go on retreats, and I'd say it. But it wasn't until maybe 2 or 3 years in, 4 or 5 years in, that, and I remember when it started to shift and it started to become sincere, when it started to become not fake. I actually started to mean it. It wasn't dry words, but there was some feeling behind them and some meaning and some often, kind of some emotional content with it. So I don't know if it makes sense to you, but I have this like I feel like we should be as authentic as we can, but then it's tricky because like if you're authentically angry, and you're in so much pain that your authentic expression is go fuck yourself all the time, then maybe don't be so authentic. Or find a way to at least practice some renunciation around spilling that energy out onto ourselves or onto each other. In the second factor of the Eightfold Path, I said earlier that there's nowhere in the Eightfold Path where the Buddha says loving kindness or compassion. And some Buddhists that I've discussed this with say, well, what about the second factor of right intention? And the specific, there's only three things in in this category of the second factor of the Eightfold Path, which is right intention, sometimes translated as right thought, the importance of intentionally thinking and directing our thoughts and our intentions. And there's three things. One is to free thoughts and intentions that are free from lust, free from craving, free from clinging. Number one, lust, craving, clinging. And then the other two are both about negativity, free from ill will, free from resentment. So many Buddhists have then made the leap to say, well, free from ill will means kindness, the opposite. Now, I'm not sure personally. I think, that the Buddhist teaching was like the minimum here. You don't have to be loving all the time, but you can't be filled, you can't be following those resenting thoughts, the ill will, and then the next one, free from cruelty. And I'm not even sure why, because it seems like pretty fucking similar, ill will and cruelty. But it's almost violence. The word is avihimsa. Himsa is. So it's like ahimsa. So it's like nonviolence. It's non-harming, non-cruelty. So when it comes to kindness, maybe you're not feeling loving and kind all of the time, but the importance of renunciation of cruelty and of or any kind of violence and of ill will, which is resentment. Now we can't just, sometimes you hear the teachings and it's like free from, like just stop. Stop resenting. Stop feeling angry towards the pain in your life. Stop. Again, this is where the mindfulness comes in. As you look at your mind, you see, I don't control my mind. I can't make my mind stop reminding me about the pain of my past. Right? Your mind just does that all by itself. And it resents it, right? And there's a survival instinct at play here where your mind just says, hey, remember that hurt. Try to avoid that in the future. Stay away from those people. hate them. That'll protect you. Resent them. That'll protect you. The mind just does that all by itself, the ill will. But the more we're mindful, the more we can see, like, oh, that habitual ill will pattern is coming. My mind has that tendency. I'm no longer going to feed into it. I'm going to try not to get hooked into it. And when I see ill will arising, I have tools now. Compassion, loving kindness, forgiveness. I can replace those thoughts. And the teachings on effort, which is down the list, down at number six, we talked about a few weeks ago. The Buddha says when an unskillful mind state has arisen, like lust, ill will, or cruelty, right? Because they come unbidden. Your mind just does that sometimes. He says you can try to replace it. One of the tools, one of the efforts is when you see the mind is resenting, try to replace it with loving thoughts, with compassionate thoughts, with forgiveness thoughts. If, you know, there's four things, he says, replace it. He says you can just acknowledge the impermanent nature, just let it arise and pass and just be like, oh, look at that resentment passing through. Just arising and passing, just knowing the impermanent nature of that rather than getting hooked into it. He said, if nothing else works, you can actually try to suppress it. If your mind, if you're really in a mind state of cruelty and it's your authentic feeling and you're like, I'm going to fucking punch them in the face and you're about to do it, he says, rather than actually letting it turn into an action, you can suppress it. It's actually quite funny. I don't know if I have it here. He says something like, just as a strong person would take a weaker person by the shoulders and throw them to the ground with your tongue pressed into the palate of your mouth and your teeth gritted, expel that negative thought from your mind. Throw it to the ground. Which is strange advice for, you know, meditators where we're usually just like, let it go, man. And the Buddha's like, yeah, let it go, replace it. And if you can't, and you're about to create some negative karma for yourself, suppress it. Try to throw it out of your mind. I haven't had much success with that kind of willpower, personally, to be able to just be like, I'm going to throw you out of my mind. Get out. I say that to my mind. My mind says, go fuck yourself. You get out. I'm in charge here. You think you're running shit? These practices of breaking the loving kindness down into the different categories is very useful. And I don't know if you had an experience with it or if I led it in a good way, but I found it quite useful to try to think of myself the way that my teachers would see me, the way that my benefactors would see me, with those eyes of wisdom, those eyes of compassion, in a way that we don't always see ourselves. And then try to embody that of like, oh, what if I met myself with that kind of patience, with that kind of acceptance, with that kind of friendliness and kindness? What if I just try, you know, try to do that, try to see myself the way that the Buddha would see you, without any judgment, without any, with just wisdom, just love. It can be a good, a useful, skillful trick to try to see ourselves in that way. And then loving kindness, you know, expanding to each other, you know, of like, we are each other's practice. All of Buddhism is relational. And it's not just, are you good at meditating? It's like, are you friendly? You know, are you able to, and even with difficult people, even with annoying people, can you be patient? Can you be tolerant? Can you be accepting? And thinking of that as a central part of our Buddhist practice. And then even with our enemies. The Dalai Lama, again, you know, comes to mind where he, you know, kind of, you know, has to leave Tibet and there's a genocide of his people and the communist Chinese and he's in exile. And you know, Tibetan Buddhism is so focused on compassion and at one point I don't know if I heard him talk about this or read about it, of he was talking about my friends, the enemy and the communist Chinese. Like they're the enemy, right? They're that is the people who are causing us harm. We have enemies, right? We don't have to be so fake spiritual that you're like, I fucking love everyone. You're like, bullshit. No, you have enemies. But can you be friendly? Can you be compassionate? Can you be, you know, wise about how you relate to, you know, the racists, the homophobes, the whatever they are, the confused people on this planet. My friends, the enemy. There was a another story that went along with that, where all of the people were trying to escape Tibet, and then they would come to, that's after the Dalai Lama was in exile in northern India, and they would come to him. And there's a story that I heard about, one of the people that made it over the Himalayas and got to McLeod Ganj and was going to meet with the Dalai Lama, and he said, how much danger were you in, and how much, because people were dying as they were crossing the Himalayas. And there was somebody said something like, I was only in danger when my mind started, when I was on the verge of allowing my mind to hate them. And that the most, not so much the physical danger, but the emotional danger of indulging in hatred and not remaining compassionate even towards the enemy. And, I know it's a fucking high bar. But forgiveness and is an act of kindness to ourselves. Compassion for our enemies isn't so much for them. Like, okay, yes, it is on some level, but really, we are the ones that suffer when we hold on to ill will, or we behave in ways that are unkind, that are cruel. And so kindness, yes, it's absolutely about being kind to each other, but it's also for your own well-being, because when you are unkind, you suffer. When you hate, you suffer. Yeah, other people suffer too when you're unkind to them, and you get the karma of that. But all of the Buddha's teachings, which are how do we free ourselves from suffering? From suffering. Kindness, compassion, even when we're not feeling it. So that we don't create more negative karma for ourselves. Forgiveness as an act of kindness to ourselves, more than even for them, so that we're not holding the hatred, the ill will. Whoops. Leave it. Oh, thanks. Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Doris. So some of my thoughts about kindness, and in the coming weeks, we'll do some compassion meditation and some forgiveness meditation, some appreciation, some equanimity. We'll talk about generosity and all of these positive emotional practices that go along with the mindfulness practice. And I'll open it up for discussion. We have a few minutes. Any thoughts, questions, comments, angles you want to discuss, please?
Yeah, I think the whole concept of authenticity is interesting, because karmically, like you're saying, it's both negative and positive, right? So would it be fair to say that the two are not mutually exclusive, and that you can feel your feelings, but you don't, I guess, heal, they say hurt people hurt others, but I feel like unhealed people hurt others, because in my healing, it's like, I can be feeling something, but I would never treat someone else that way, because I don't want them to feel that way. And actually, the more of that I express, the more that I'm softened. Even in just little moments, I just try to practice kindness all the time. And happened yesterday, I was at the beach. I paid for parking. I had an extra 2 hours. I offered the guy who's going to take my spot the ticket, and he gave me more money back than what I paid for it originally. So, and I was in a shitty mood, but I just feel like you can both be in a shit mood and still authentically be a kind person in what you would say.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah. Makes sense to me.
And then the more you do that, the more the karma comes back to you, and then maybe the less you feel over time.
Yeah.
But I think it's actually harder to do that inwardly, right? Like the self-dialogue that you were saying, like I find it very difficult to be kind to myself. I find it very easy to be kind to others, but I find the more that I'm kind to others, the more that people are kind to me, and the more kind I'm able to be to myself.
Yeah. The Buddha referred to this path as going against the stream for a reason, because it's quite counter to our instincts a lot of the time, what we need to do to really be free. And self-compassion and kindness to ourselves isn't very instinctual for most of us. And it's a learned skill. It's a developed skill. And so we, you know, and sometimes authentic is like, do what you feel. But sometimes in the Dharma, it's like, actually, definitely don't do what you feel. Definitely have some renunciation about, you know, and do a counter-instinctual action. Be generous even when you're feeling selfish. Be kind even when you're feeling a bit angry. And it can be an authentic expression because it's coming from that intentional, I'm really trying to do it, which is different than being fake, pretending like you're not hurting, pretending like you're happy all of the time. That acknowledge, that authentic acknowledgement of like, yeah, I'm really suffering and feeling like I don't want to help anyone, and I'm still going to pick up the phone and, you know, see how I can help people. And, you know, 12-step recovery is so good about that conditioning of like, be of service, be of service to people. Don't just be thinking about yourself all the time. The antidote to selfishness is be of service. Now, in the long run, I've seen in the 12-step world and Buddhist world too, of people who take that too far and are always trying to avoid their own feelings by helping someone else and have never learned to just sit with their own shit, right? And so there's some Buddhists who are really good at just sitting with their own shit and never help anybody. And then there's some people that are really good at being of service and caring about other people all of the time and don't haven't learned to just turn towards our own sorrow and that balance of both.
This idea of authenticity versus the fake it till you make it. The way I'm thinking about that, this all reminds me, 5 or 6 years ago, I had this job where I had to engage with like very young, small children, like toddlers, like literally like 2.5 and 3 year olds. And I really badly needed a job and I took the job and I was petrified because I had like no experience with that age group really. And I was really worried about, especially at that time in my life, I was like, I don't know if I can actually be empathetic to a 3-year-old, you know, and I'm like not a parent. I had no background to it, but it was a job that I needed. And I think I was under the impression, like a lot of people, that you either just like have the empathy or you don't, you know. And you know, it sounds corny, but I did this job for a couple of years and you can learn it, you know, and it may feel unnatural, but you show up and you do it again and again, which is what you're describing. Mm-hmm. So in a way I wasn't being authentic really. I mean, I was learning something that, yeah, I didn't have. And so I think that's maybe what it is. It's not, I didn't authentically have it. But I also wouldn't describe it as being fake necessarily, you know. So it is like an action that we have to consistently do.
Yeah. With the wisdom practices of Buddhism, neuroscience is interesting perspective of, you know, when you say something in your mind over and over, like, may you be happy, may you be at ease, may you be free, may I, you know, all of those aspirational phrases that we use in the heart practices, you're creating neural pathways. Neuroscience kind of says like, yeah, you say something you don't mean over and over about kindness, about compassion, eventually you train your mind to be kind. So I do think it, you know, I like that perspective. And then there's another perspective that maybe is a little bit more Buddhist than the neural pathways, which says that actually your heart's true nature is kind and compassionate and empathetic and loving. And that's actually who we are underneath it all, underneath the craving and clinging and judging and comparing tendencies of the conditioned mind is an unconditioned state of love. And this is, you know, one of the reasons why the Buddha didn't teach loving kindness in the beginning is he said, if you're just mindful, you'll awaken this heart of loving kindness and compassion. You'll uncover it because it's already here and you just need to gain access to it. And that every time we say the phrase or we do the mindfulness, many of you have heard me say this a lot of times, but my father used to say this. He said, every time we have a unskillful reaction, it's like putting a sheet of rice paper over your heart. Every judgment, every comparing, every jealousy, every unskillful, you know, moment of lust and ill will and, you know, feelings of resentment that you're involved in is like a sheet of rice paper over your heart. Every moment of kindness and compassion and forgiveness and mindfulness is melting of one of those sheets. And that the more you do that, you're uncovering, you're excavating, you're coming back into the wise heart. It's always been here. We just have to recover it. We just have to uncover it. And so, you know, whatever perspective you like, whether you're kind of more, well, science makes more sense than this uncovery shit, but, you know, neuropathways or just accessing something that's already been here. Felicity.
Like to go on to like the fake it to make it authenticity thing, like I have an aversion to it, right? When you said it, I have an aversion to it. Mm-hmm. It's just, I live in Venice. I just have an aversion to that thought process. Like, he had an awareness, an authentic awareness that he wasn't empathetic to a toddler. He didn't brainwash himself to say that he is an empathetic person to a toddler. Mm-hmm. So like, that's why it was authentic. Mm-hmm. But like the dicey thing to me is like gaslighting yourself in the world, saying like you're this compassionate person, I'm this happy person, I'm this loving person, and like not actually doing authentic inventory on yourself, which because you create the dukkha aversion to your actual feelings, and you're like, well, the spiritual Buddhist thing says like I need to be kind to these people, so like instead of dealing with like whatever triggers, resentments I've dealt with and trauma in my life, I'll just like dust it off because like Noah told me I have to like be kind on Monday. And yeah. It's like I have an aversion to it just because shit happens, and like being completely aware and compassionate to yourself through that suffering will create compassion to others, versus like no matter how shitty I am, I'm gonna like fake it because mm-hmm. I'm like I'll be suffering constantly. Mm-hmm. So I'm like I'm faking it so much. So like my question is like why I feel that aversion to it now. I probably know why, but in general, like that balance is rough, especially like in Los Angeles.
Spiritual communities are filled with, you know, people who sometimes inauthenticity is even encouraged in some of the kind of maybe Buddhist or yoga or whatever communities where you're supposed to act like you're blissed out. Rather than kind of, it's one of the things I really appreciate about Buddhism is like first noble truth, suffering. Let's talk about the authentic suffering that we're in. We want to get free. We want to get lightened up and kind and, but you know, first we had to see like the suffering and acknowledge that that's here and that that's what we're relating to. And, but yeah, I have some resistance to the fake it till you make it too, but I also have the direct experience of like, I really needed to do that for a long time because I authentically wanted to be violent a lot. And I needed to, you know, stop that. I really, you know, my authentic expression was like, I'm going to steal your shit and punch you. And then I was like, okay, I got to stop that lifestyle. And sit on my hands and kind of not take things that aren't mine and not put my hands on people. And, you know, so it took a long time for me kind of just being like, okay, I'm fucking sober now and I'm meditating and I don't steal and I'm trying not to lie. And, you know,
I understand like the fake it till you make it, like maybe
in renunciation, kind
of like as far as like manners or whatever, like being aware of like I have an anger issue, I don't want to punch you, but I want to go to jail. But like, I understand. And then, but like the, maybe the fake it to make it works on the mat, you know, but for meditation wise, mm-hmm. like have compassion for your feelings, but like in real life, that's.
Yeah.
I think it's the faking that we struggle with, but maybe it's like the openness to getting to a place where it's not fake.
sports.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But I think you call it faking it till you make it, but it's like, maybe I just like open up to the idea that it doesn't have to be this way. Like, this is how it is right now. I'm acknowledging it. I'm honoring it. But like, maybe it doesn't always have to be this way. And what can I do to get to that place where I can authentically be not that? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think we get stuck on the fake, especially in LA, because we're like, ooh, friend. But I think it's really just more like the openness to like, hey, I don't feel that I came with those instructions, but like I'm open to the learning. It's kind of what we're doing here.
But that's got awareness to it.
Yes.
Yeah, you have to have awareness.
You know what I'm saying?
So mindfulness is,
like, awareness is authentic.
Yeah, of course.
It's like, I'm aware that like, I want to punch you in the face. I'm not going to, but like, I also want to be authentic that like, anger issues. So it's like, you know, versus like, I have no anger issues. Super great.
But also, does Buddhism allow for like, you know, like a rage room or like, you know, like, get into boxing or something?
Well, I mean, the question I'm struggling with is violence always not compassionate? Can violence be compassionate?
No.
Never? I mean, is it more compassionate for me to turn my cheek to a Nazi? How is that compassionate to the rest of the planet? Where's the line? I struggle with that idea. To me, it's more compassionate to take that Nazi. I don't have any problem with that. And that's compassionate to the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how to not see it that way.
So I'm saying, that's my, like, where do you draw a line then? Like, that, like, if you're doing that to that one person, then, you know, the next person, like,
this one person has said, my idea is to destroy thousands of people. I'm being abundantly clear about that.
Yeah. But he's still on the same planet.
But I don't want him on the planet.
Yeah.
So Buddha
doesn't deserve to be on the planet.
So we're just about out of time. Big topic. In brief, the teachings of the Buddha are completely nonviolent, even towards people who you think deserve violence. Completely nonviolent, period. Period, completely nonviolent. This is the teachings of the Buddha. You can find your own way. You can, you know, punch as many Nazis as you want to punch, but you'll still have the karma of that action. And the Buddha's teaching, and the Buddha lived in a time of war and violence. And most of his relatives were murdered in a war during the Buddha's lifetime. And he chose a path of total nonviolence. And this was his awakening it is a perspective of compassion. And you're talking about the Nazi or whatever confused person has developed racist, you know, ideas or nationalist ideas or whatever it is. They're coming from ignorance. There's no wisdom to those views, and they're suffering and they're confused and they're, you know, whatever conditioning has led to that ignorance. Wanting to be violent, and there, it is interesting to look at, because I have quite a bit of a similar feeling that you do sometimes, not as much anymore, but did for a long time. And I saw that, like, there's that part of me that that's almost like a bully. Like, I think that I want to protect, but there's that part of me when I start to see how much confusion and ignorance people are in, and then I want to punish them for being so confused and so ignorant. I want to physically harm somebody who's already in so much ignorance and suffering. And then I kind of had some visions of myself as like, oh, that's like almost like bullying, you know, people that are already quite disabled emotionally and mentally and spiritually, you know, just kind of not, you know, not awake at all. And I want to punish them. And anyways, that might not work for you, but that worked for me, you know, to kind of see like, oh, I want to cause harm to my father, who's a Jew, is a Jew, he asked this question when he got into practice in the 70s. He's like, how, he, you know, somebody said you have to forgive everyone. And he thought to himself, how am I ever going to forgive Hitler? And then he said at one point he was meditating and he had the image of Hitler as a abused child. And then he said, as I kind of saw Hitler as an abused child, it gave me a tiny bit of empathy and opened the door to the willingness to have, you know, whatever happened in that person, you know, grew into this, you know, monster in, you know, in some ways, but that it all came from some suffering. You know, the only way that we become that, the Nazi, the whatever it is, the nationalist, the homophobe, the racist, is through suffering and ignorance. It's through a lack of love and a lack of kindness and a lack of wisdom that anybody becomes that. And so in our Buddhist practice, trying to look a little bit deeper and seeing the wounds, seeing the confusion, and trying to meet it with compassion, trying to meet it with loving kindness, and also really good boundaries. And also, I'm not personally against self-defense. They're attacking, yeah. Buddhism, I think, is against self-defense. But I'll, you know, take off my Buddhist hat and say, like, you know, if you need to protect yourself or protect someone else. There's actually a thing in the Buddhist teaching where he says, if you're attacked and they're holding you down and they're cutting off your arms and your legs, just radiate loving kindness towards them. Do not let hatred enter your heart. Just radiate compassion and loving kindness toward these poor, confused people who are chopping off your arms and legs. So it's a high bar. It's a high bar of nonviolence. But my own sense is like, first kick them in the nuts so they don't cut your legs off. Or fucking run. Yeah. He basically says, don't, you know, if you're going to get killed, loving kindness and compassion as you're being killed. Yeah. Okay, we went over time a little bit. Be kind to yourself, to each other, to everyone as much as you can be. Use the loving kindness practice to get that to become more and more authentic. Sorry about canceling the day long last weekend for anybody that was planning to come. I was called out of town. My mom broke her leg and up in Santa Cruz and needed some help and some care. So I went up and spent the weekend taking care of my mom. She's usually here on Zoom. I think she didn't make it tonight. I'll schedule another day long coming. Maybe we'll look at the summer, June or something. How many spots are available for May? For the retreat. There's a couple spots left for the, I think at least a couple, if you want to, 4 spots left. If anybody wants to come to the weekend retreat, May, I think it's 12th through 14th, 10th through 12th,
yep.
10th through 12th. And then there, we're about to put up the 9-day retreat for the fall, which is like late September, early October. 9-night, 10-day retreat, silent Vipassana practice. So some practice opportunities coming up. Class is done by donation. Against the Stream is a nonprofit that is fully supported by the generosity, volunteer donations. Please be as generous as you can. Suggested donation is $20, $25 for a drop-in class, but give whatever feels appropriate to you. And thank you in advance for your generosity. May any goodness that comes from our practice be shared with each other and shared outward in all directions, shared with all living beings. May each one of us get as free as we can, and together may we create a positive change on this planet. Thanks for tuning in to the podcast. This is Noah Levine, founder of Against the Stream and Refuge Recovery. If you feel moved to leave a donation, there's a link in the show notes.